My first question for Russ Vogt, the White House budget director, at our Monitor breakfast yesterday, was whether he had just stayed up till the wee hours. After all, it took the Senate until after 2 a.m. to pass a bill he'd fought for that claws back $9 billion in federal spending on foreign aid and public broadcasting. But no, Mr. Vogt said, he hadn't waited up. Rather, he told us, he's looking ahead to more rescissions, likely soon, as Monitor reporter Cameron Joseph writes in today's Daily. Within a $6.8 trillion federal budget, $9 billion doesn't seem like much, some Republicans have noted, but it's still a new day in Washington. The balance of power between the executive branch and Congress is shifting. It's Friday, July 18th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning, I'm Linda Feldman. First, our curation of news briefs from staff writers and wire services. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs. Consumer spending ticked back up. Despite some shoppers' worries about tariffs and the state of the U.S. economy, retail sales rose a better-than-expected 0.6% in June, the Commerce Department said Thursday, after two consecutive months of spending declines, a 0.1% pullback in April, and a 0.9% slowdown in May. Britain lowered its voting age. In an effort to expand democratic participation ahead of the next national election, the government has dropped the voting age from 18 to 16. Turnout in the 2024 general election was less than 60%, the lowest since 2001. Some conservatives have opposed the change, which is presumed to benefit the Labour Party. Supporters say it could help build trust in the democratic process from a younger age. Also, a hunk of Mars and a young dino made auction history. The largest piece of the red planet ever found on Earth, a 54-pound meteorite discovered in the Sahara in 2023, sold for more than $5 million at a Sotheby's auction in New York. But the bones of a juvenile dinosaur, one of four known Ceratosaurus nasicornis skeletons, stole the show, fetching more than $30 million in a bidding war during Wednesday's sale. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com for our latest news. White House Budget Director Russell Vogt, who played a critical role in getting Republicans to pass the One Big Beautiful Bill earlier this month, told reporters at a Christian Science Monitor breakfast that it is very, very substantial that the Trump administration is getting to claw back spending that Congress previously authorized. This legislative tool called rescission, which hasn't been used since the 1990s, is helping the Trump administration reshape the executive branch while dramatically strengthening its hand vis-a-vis Congress. Mr. Vogt, an architect of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 for the new administration, says such tools are necessary, quote, to change the paradigm of how Washington has worked. Cameron Joseph reports from Washington for The Monitor. As the Israel-Hamas war grinds on with a potential ceasefire still only on the horizon, Palestinian residents of Gaza are facing a new challenge, armed local gangs. The armed groups are defining daily life for many Gazans, seizing the bulk of humanitarian aid, running racketeering schemes, and using lethal force to get their way, residents and aid workers say. Gangs continue to block aid trucks in Khan Yunis, stealing and hiding hundreds of tons of aid and diverting it to markets, keeping the prices of flour and other basic commodities high, says local journalist Osama Al-Khalut. Hada Abdul Fattah and Taylor Luck report from Deir el-Balah, Gaza Strip, and Amman Jordan for The Monitor. Congress is moving on major cryptocurrency legislation for the first time, passing one bill Thursday and looking at two more during what it's calling Crypto Week. If enacted, the set of three would set up rules for the digital money, encouraging more private sector engagement. Passage might even bring a new level of consumer acceptance to Bitcoin, now trading at record levels, and to the crypto industry in general. We look at what each legislative move means, where crypto support comes from, and why these otherwise unregulated assets remain a risky investment, not the next currency. Laurent Belsey reports for The Monitor. It began with a BBC TV report from Ethiopia in 1984. The images of people in dire need touched millions, among them an Irish pop star named Bob Geldof. The Live Aid benefit concert he would organize in July 1985 presented 16 hours of music by a who's who of artists in London's Wembley Stadium and in John F. Kennedy Stadium in Philadelphia. It would raise around $170 million, a third of that from phone calls on the day. But the event's real strength was in the human connection it awakened. Today, our columnist writes, many governments' priorities seem to be moving in the opposite way. Citizens worldwide will help determine whether the global mood shifts again. Ned Temko reports from London for The Monitor. Ava Victor's remarkable writing-directing debut feature, Sorry Baby, deals with the sexual assault of Agnes, played by Ms. Victor, a young English lit grad student in a leafy New England college town. The assault is never shown, only discussed. In a very real sense, the movie isn't about the assault at all. It's about how Agnes, in fits and starts, opens up a new life for herself. It's about restoration, not victimization. Our critic describes the film as a diary of personal reclamation. Peter Rayner writes for The Monitor. The Tanzania-Zambia Railway, which is decades old and known as the Tazara, was built to connect central and southern African states to the Indian Ocean. The train has a reputation for extreme unreliability. Unannounced delays are to be expected, extending one's journey by 72 hours or more. Our contributor writes, my companions and I consider ourselves fortunate. Our journey ended up being a mere 13 hours behind schedule. This is not a ride for an impatient traveler, but even with these drawbacks, the cars fill up. Now, Beijing has pledged at least $1 billion to revitalize the decades-old rail line. Contributor Kung Chun Chung reports from aboard the Tanzania-Zambia Railway. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on how Arab music hits a high note in Europe. As continued conflict and repression roil their home countries, members of Europe's Middle Eastern and North African diaspora are also confronting harsh rhetoric and violence in their host countries. But an expanding cohort of musicians and DJs in exile is helping foster connections and joy among fellow immigrants and a broader audience through a vibrant musical nightlife and online presence. Recurrent Arab club music, parties, and festivals, such as the monthly Hishek Bishek in London and Sahra in Berlin, or the annual Nawafiz in the Netherlands, are becoming anticipated cultural fixtures, showcasing a hybrid of local and folk traditions melded with popular global genres and electronic beats. These events embody what's been called glocalization. The lyrics and the fans are multilingual, flowing seamlessly between Arabic and smatterings of French, English, German, and Spanish. Audience appreciation for such music is soaring and diversifying, partly thanks to streaming services and social media. This has led to new record labels starting up, such as Habibi Funk in Germany. Lebanese musician Sharif Megarban, who issues songs under the label and has performed at London's Jazz Cafe, told Time magazine he was delighted at having such a varied audience. An English fan who confessed it being obsessed with his music found her way to it via Spotify and a Turkish music festival in France. As New Lines journalist Umeyma Nishi wrote this week, music festivals and club events are hubs where diaspora musicians are blending tradition and rebellion, and also where music meets activism. The spaces give voice to the community's optimism and worry about political change back home. They may also evoke a nostalgic love and pride in homelands and cultures left behind. Before, there was a tendency to hide one's identity a bit. Tunisian-born DJ Haroun Ben Hamida told Ms. Nishi. But now, Arab artists and their audiences have reclaimed their identity and have started uniting together, seeing each other, working on projects together. One example of seeing each other is the musical duo Shakoon, which pairs a Syrian refugee who was part of the large wave of migration to Europe a decade ago with a classically trained German musician. Shakoon's eclectic approach aims to counter Islamophobia and dissolve cultural barriers, group member Amin Hayer told Middle East Eye. When we perform our music, he said, the audience is not only Arabs or not only Germans. Multiple nationalities are joining. Through its shared melodies and memories, the appeal of Arab diaspora music among immigrants and host communities in Europe is enlarging perceptions of blending and belonging. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, as we understand that we are all created and maintained by God, we find that we can't be hampered in our activities. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Ian Case and Mackenzie Farkas.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2025.